Edison Hatter here. Welcome into this week's episode of the Harness Players Podcast. We're racing for the Easter weekend here. We're going to talk some Friday evening racing, Friday, March 29th, out at Fraser Downs. As always, we got that dollar pick five sequence to discuss here, and I'll bring some guests in shortly to discuss that sequence. I'll have Mike Rabosi and Garnett Barnsdale with me. Then we'll give it up to Mike Rabosi. He's got another special interview with a member of the stable.ca, so we'll look forward to hearing some insights from Mike and his guests a little bit later on, and we'll wrap it up with some Yonkers Raceway discussions for Monday, April 1st, April Fool's Day. We bring us the third leg of the Borgata Pacing Series, so we'll discuss a little bit about what happened last week in leg two. We'll discuss a little bit of leg three this week, and that'll be a good segment to wrap up the show. But first things first, we go out to Western Canada once again. It's Fraser Downs Racing, and my first co-host with me here, it's Mike Rabosi. Mike, welcome.
Yeah, here I am again. Harness Players Podcast. I don't know if you mentioned that, but that's what we're doing here.
And we've got Garnett Barnsdale with us as well. And Garnett, I think first time we've had you on in a while. Always good to hear your voice.
Happy to be back. And you mentioned the stable. I own pieces of three Ohio-bred two-year-olds I'm looking forward to see go. One of them Mike would probably be familiar with is a half-brother to Charlie May. His name's Pelican Al. So,
oh, nice.
Looking forward to that, and hopefully have some fun with that this summer.
You know, Mike's done a great job with that stable content, so I've kind of left him in charge of it, but I've put it in his ear, Garnett, that he should get you in one of those stable segments to discuss for you as an owner what it's like with them. But our order of business here to discuss is Fraser Downs, and again, it's a nine-race card on Friday night. It's a good low takeout opportunity on the pick five here. It's a dollar minimum wager. They've got those $2 early and late doubles I know Mike Bosey's big on. And Garnett, what about for you? I know you're a good follower of Fraser. We see you tweeting or Xing or whatever we call it nowadays about it a good bit. Obviously, I know you're a good night owl, so it's a good opportunity here late at night, right? Kind of a standalone product.
Yeah, and especially, you know, I got to give Kelly, I got to give Dawn Lupel a lot of credit, right? She went out there and she actually asked some questions on X, formerly known as Twitter, about what bettors want and what they're interested in. One of the things was, I don't know if it was a poll or a bunch of responses she got, was to make some of these bets non-carryover and get rid of the low minimums. And that's what we have here. We have a $1 pick five, which I think is great.
All right, well, we'll jump right into that pick five, and it starts with race number four. It's a non-winners of four on the pace here, and it's a field of seven. And again, when we get to those eight-horse fields, we'll mention once again this week here, the eight-horse does start from that second tier. And Mike, Minnetonka Joe has been my top choice, I think, 2 weeks in a row here. It's not been generous to me, and it's been a shorter price than I would have liked, too. Do we go back to this week or somewhere else?
Probably have to use one thing to add. No Mohawk this week, especially on Friday. So Fraser maybe should see some more eyes, some more handle. Starts at 10 Eastern, 7 Pacific. So hopefully a lot of people in on this pick five. The handle's been quite good. They're even getting some nights where they're getting over 300,000. That's you know, some of the best handle they've had in decades, from what they understanding. So back to the race, Minnetonka Joe, yeah, beaten favorite last two times. He's always around it. He's always sort of involved early from outside post, but can't seem to quite, pass the last horse, it seems. And but he's okay in here. And shorter field, I think that some of these horses are struggling, especially inside, so you probably need to use him. I've been chasing Willie Rocket a little bit since he was winning in early March, and he's been in tough there. This is a little bit of a better spot for him despite the outside post. I could see Anderson blasting off with him here, and I think he probably needs used. And another horse I've been chasing is the two Are You a Crazy. This horse tried the front last time, moved early, didn't quite finish it up. So I think he's a little bit better from off the pace. Should get that trip. New driver here, so we'll see. But off the pace trip for the top barn on the grounds, and I think still has a chance versus these. So I was 2-6-7.
Garnett?
I'm going to single Minnetonka Joe. I think he's been, you know, I think he's got some excuses in some of these races. Two starts back, He came home in 56 flat. I don't think you can expect much more than that in this class. And last start, he made front and then came under immediate assault from two others, right? So he made a late move again. If you go down to February 23rd, he won against better horses. Now where's the seven or 45,000 and kind of got a pocket trip there. So I think he just needs a little bit better racing luck, but I think he's the fastest horse in here. So I'm going to start out with a single, and that's him.
I will use Minicata Joe once again this week. I don't know, third strike and he's out, but I'll give him one more try. I'm also using the two, Aria Crazy, who I know Mike there's including as well. That's the one from the Jim Marino barn that I'll toss in the spot. So 2-6 for me. It looks like we're all pretty similar there in the first race. So let's try race number five. These are $9,000 condition claimers on the pace. Another field of seven. Garnett, how are we continuing to pick five here?
This is interesting to me because this race is handicapped by the number of wins. So the horse that draws the farthest outside is Credit Is Magic. But Credit Is Magic had a really good trip last time, I thought, on the lead with stealing a minute half and couldn't get the job done. So I'm going to be against him. I'm going to go three deep. I'm going to use Pull the Trigger and hope that he starts anywhere better than fourth, which it's kind of remarkable to me. His last five starts all look almost identical at the quarter. Fourth by six, fourth by five, fourth by three, right? Every race. So, you know, you get the top driver here, Kelly Hort from the rail. I think he'll put him into the race. I like number four, Billy Buxton, who dropped down to this level last time, made a first over bid. The third quarter was fast, you know, and he hung in there for third. And the last one I'm going to use is the six Old Brown Truck, who has some gait issues, but also has some speed. And last time he held it together, finished second at this level. I could see Old Brown Truck potentially if he makes front going all the way. So I'm going to go 1-4-6.
Mike, I use the six Old Brown Truck as well here, and the seven Credit Is Magic. I ended up tossing on my ticket. I'm going to take a stand against Billy Buxton. I just don't feel like this is a field that I want to take anybody at too short of a number. I mean, Mike, this is clearly a pretty camera-shy group, and it says something when my top choices are 3-63 and 4-112, and your potentially odds-on favorite, who was 2-5 last time, is 2-39.
Yeah, and the 3-63 and 4-112 are in the outside post. No thank you on either of those. Agree with Garnett on two of his. Billy Buxton, I hate horses that lose at 2-5. Like, especially whenever they drop like that. And, you know, this horse was 55-1 on March 15th and ends up 2-5 and loses in a field he was probably supposed to win. He's supposed to win this race, too, especially against some of these horses that really do not know how to win. The one's not much better. 1-22 just has the connections. And, you know, most likely in a race like this, somebody has to win it. I'm going to go with the connections that like to win races. So give me the 1-4.
Race number six is the middle leg of the sequence. It's non-winners of two on the pace. Mike, this is where we see that field of eight. So that second tier is going to come into play as the eight will start from the second tier.
Yeah, this is a good race. And I know Better's raced pretty well in his last two, but this is a better spot. He's really laid over both of those fields. And you can tell by the odds that he did. He's 2-5 and then basically 1-20 on March 15th. Well, he's not going to be 1-20 here. This is a better spot, I think. Better horses in here. So you have to use him. But I do think that the four, the real Kent's, he was close to that one back on March 15th and then raced better, I thought, on March 22nd. So he's a use for me in here. And then the eight, sort of a wild card. Ships in from Century Mile, a winning qualifier, kicked 28-2. You get the second tier. This horse has limited starts, but was racing, you know, in stakes races there at Century Mile last year. So two turning three. Gets a field that probably not quite as good as, you know, this horse was facing last year. If you look at that win on October 20th, I know it was a while ago, kicked 27-1 when favored there. I think the talent's there. There's no killers in this race, so I'm 2-4-8.
Garnett?
I don't think the four is called the Real Kent, so I think it's called something else, but I don't want to say it because you got to be careful with that name.
They're all Kents, maybe?
They're all Kents, yeah. And okay. If you're an announcer and you screw that up, you're probably not working tomorrow.
I'm not an announcer.
If you can stay in Western Canada, far away from me and my tracks.
So I'm going to single I Know Better. I'm just impressed how this horse, two starts in a row, lost the lead going to the three quarters of this track, and they re-rallied and won easily, really, right? With sub-29 last quarters, which not many of the others in here can do. I'm going to go really deep in the last leg of this thing. So I think I Know Better probably strings together another win here. I think he's the best horse and he's got a good post and the best driver. So I'm going to single him.
I will jump right on that bandwagon, Garnett. Yeah, I agree with Mike. I don't think we're going to do 1-20 this week. I think a little bit, maybe of a tougher group this week, but I still think a reliable single here. So that is my single. As we go to race seven, Garnett, $12,000 claimer. So you got a pair of singles in the first two legs. So I guess it's going to give you an opportunity to go pretty deep here towards the end.
I'm only going too deep here. I told you I'm going big time deep in the last leg. But I think you absolutely have to use Bay Street Buddy, who got a horrendous trip last week. And he gets Kelly Hort back here, who won, you know, with him the last four times he drove him. But the other one I like at a price here a little bit is Outlaw Duke Worthy. You know, just the fact that he's got the rail and, you know, the last time he drew inside, he does show a very good race from the inside, five starts back. And I think there's an opportunity here if Bay Street Buddy goes to the front, Outlaw Duke Worthy could get a pocket trip and maybe get him in the lane. So I'm going to just go 1 and 2.
Mike, we've had, we've had Old Brown Truck in race 5. We've had They're All Kents in race 6. And we get Chuck U Farley in race 7. This kind of is just setting up to be an announcer's nightmare kind of a card.
Yeah, we talked about that when I was on with Don, too. And this horse was racing much better at that point. Not so much anymore, but does get a driver switch. And that could prove, I think, helpful to this one. You know, it has shown capabilities versus better here. This isn't as tough as some of those races I thought, like 3 and 4 back. So I think he rates a chance, especially off that driver switch. So I would use him. Agree on Bay Street Buddy and a tough trip, but, you know, was beating up on claimers and, you know, kind of climbed the ladder. Likes to win. 10 wins the last 2 years. But these aren't easy races. He's not, I know he was favored in some of those races, but this is a tougher spot. He's going to have to work to win. I would use him. And then the 7, My Little Ginger Man, raced pretty well last time against a horse that I actually liked to win that race on March 22nd. That was a dropper there. I think that he needs to get out from this post, but was able to get close enough from the rail last time. Can probably do it either way, but is more effective up front. I think that he is live enough, is in form. The lines maybe have him hidden. He should be a decent enough price. So 2.57.
2 Bay Street Buddy. We all seem to agree on here. And Mike, I'm with you with the 7, My Little Ginger Man. A little bit interested to see how the trip's going to work out for him, but I think if it works out, he could be a good price there from the outside post. So 2.7 for me in race 7. Race 8, Mike, we better let you go first because whoever you're using, it sounds like Garnett might be using him too, and maybe some more.
I mean, Joe DiMaggio probably wins this race. Needed that last start, 7 hole, and came flying late. Kicked 29 in a 54 3 mile when taking money. Draws perfectly now. Really no excuses. He's supposed to win this race, so key the 2 in the last.
I used the 2 Joe DiMaggio. You know, I almost singled there. I was only at $8, though, so I figured I'll make it 16. I added Vertical Squirt here as well, who I know has been racing some of those preferreds, finds the Sonometers a 9,000 spot here for these condition pacers. So I'll go 2-3. So I'm 2 deep. You're singling. Garnett, you clearly have a different opinion of this race, using more apparently than us.
I'm 5 deep. I got both of those. I'm using other droppers, Bad Moon Horizon, who had 2 7 holes in the open and preferred classes. I think he's got he can definitely step up here. He's, you know, this is the first time he's dropped out of the preferred. He's been at 6 times in a row this year. Had a couple thirds. I think he's capable. As a big bomb, I'm going to throw Pure Form Mr. Toffee in, coming off a 153 3 4 mile. I think he's not going to take a lot of money because it was, you know, wasn't as good of a race. But if he can work out a similar kind of trip, listen, if this horse lands in the pocket and he's in the pocket turning for home, he shows he can win in 53 3 4 off that trip. And the other one I'm going to use is Rum and Raisins, who he's another interesting dropper. I think he's going to show speed in this race. He typically does, except for the last 2 when he was over his head. So I went 2, 3, 4, 6, 7. And one other point I wanted to make about Outlaw Duke Worthy that I kind of missed when it was my turn, the 1 horse in race 7. 2 starts back, he was first up, and he gave Bay Street Buddy perfect cover, and he was only beaten a half length. That was with Al Malloy driving. Went to Dennis Johnson one time from an outside post. Back to Al Malloy is a much higher percentage driver, and that's why I liked him originally. So, and I guess with that, I'm done.
All right, well, let's give out some tickets here, Mike. Mike, Friday night, as you mentioned, it's a great opportunity to play this wager when it gets started on Friday night, with no Mohawk this week, although I will say Mohawk's got a big 15 race card coming up Saturday night. But yeah, a good little quiet spot there in the calendar Friday night, and for that matter, even the NCAA March Madness tournament will be starting to wind down for the night, so good opportunity to jump into this pick 5.
Yeah, and if you're playing, who knows, we might get another carryover. There's a carryover into Thursday night, so keep an eye on that. Could end up with another carry for into Friday. My ticket's 267 with 1-4, with 248, with 257, with 254 for a buck.
Garnett?
Mine's a little cheaper. It's $30. It's 6 with 146, with 2, with 1-2, with 2-3-4-6-7. Did you say 15 races?
Yes, 15 Saturday, 6-10 first post at Woodbine Mohawk Park.
I hate you.
Why? You have to do coverage?
Well, I have to do my analysis, which is normally 10, but is now 15. But thanks for the heads up, because if I can find that.
You thought you had time off this week? No, you don't.
Yeah, well, I did, but now I'm paying for it, right?
We got kind of the week off, you know, and the rest of the other cards. I mean, it's less races total for the week, for sure.
That's a good point.
$16 for me, 2-6 with 6-7 with 2. With 2-7, with 2-3, and you know, we got to this segment a minute or two early here. So, Mike, you talk all the time on your show. So do I. We don't get to talk to Garnett much. So, Garnett, you can give us a Masters pick, college basketball predictions. Tell us where we can find these Mohawk picks of yours. What other news stories you write, coverage you do. You can tell us whatever you want.
Well, I have a pick 5 up for Northfield Park, and I'm not sure if it started yet or not at harnesslink.com. There's a carryover in race 6. I do a lot of work for them. Anytime there's a carryover at some of these tracks, I usually put it up. DRF.com, obviously. The harness side, DRF Harness, has my Mohawk Park picks every day, unless I'm on vacation, in which case Mike usually fills in for me. I do work for Ontario Racing as well, and we have a video up almost every race day with a best bet or a spot play, and Mike works with me on that as well, so you usually see him on Saturdays on there. And Masters pick, I don't know, man. You got to give me the winner of the Masters. I'm not a golf guy. College basketball, I'll go Purdue because I want to see the Canadian kid win. I guess I'll go with that.
Teams are 100% winning the national championship after losing to a 16 seed the year before.
There you go. See, only you would have that stat.
There's only like one team that's ever done it. I think two teams have lost to a one.
Oh, that's right. That's
and the one team did win and won it.
That's right.
See, that's why I went to school to be a math major for years. See, I slipped that in there and it sounded really good, but Mike dissected it.
In a hurry.
All right, Mike, last thing we'll close off here with, just fair warning to you, as we're recording this, it's Tuesday night, so obviously it'll be published later. So if the Mega Millions winning numbers on Tuesday night were 11, 28, 54, 58, 68, and Mega Ball 6, I will not be in for the rest of my shifts forevermore on this show, so I wish you luck.
Okay. Good luck with that.
All right, well, Garnett and I are going to clear out of here, and we'll get Mike back on the other side of this timeout, and he'll be back with the Stable.ca segment for this week.
Nahu Mikey P back, and we have a little change of plans. We had Garnett for the Fraser pod, and I was going to have somebody else for the Stable segment, but a few people that we were trying to get kind of fell through today. And who better to bring than Garnett Barnesdale back for the Stable segment, because he's been involved with the Stable.ca for quite a long time. So, Garnett, I know you're in with the Stable. You said on the previous segment you have pieces of three horses now. How long have you been in with the Stable.ca?
Well, I was in it right from the start, Mike. We got in on a very cheap horse, which, you know, at the start, that's all they really had were cheap ones. And that one never made it to the races, but, you know, and I shouldn't say that. I probably shouldn't say it because nobody else is going to get this deal now. But Anthony was good enough to give anybody that was in on that horse a credit for the next horse, for the next year. So, you know, I've been in it basically from the start. I took a year off, but I'm back in now. And I'm pretty excited with these three that I have pieces of. I have pieces of two trotters. One of them, Aunt Lily, I think they bought for $67,000 US. She's a half sister to the filly that won the Pennsylvania Sire Stakes Championship last year, and I believe she was fourth or fifth in the Breeders' Crown Final. She's looked pretty good so far. And then the pacer that I'm in on is a half brother to Charlie May, who you're very familiar with, and pretty good so far. But you know, what you got until they go behind the gate, really. You kind of have an idea, but some surprise you and go forward, and some surprise you and don't. So I try to stay kind of level-headed until I see see them behind the starting gate at least once in a qualifier or something. But I'm pretty excited. They do very well in Ohio, as you're aware.
Absolutely. And so we know your background. I mean, you're a horse player. You're a handicapper. You're a guy that can look at a program and give us a winner more likely than not. But when it comes to getting in on some of these horses, are you doing research? What sort of method are you using to decide which ones you get involved with?
Yeah, I do research on the pedigree mainly, and I like to look at the videos. You know, not only do they have videos from the owners of the stallions, the barns, the stables that own the stallions, which are put out as, you know, for informational and advertising purposes prior to the sales. But, you know, Anthony goes to these sales and he takes videos of the horses as if he has them to be brought out, and he'll put videos on YouTube. So any ones that he's kind of indicated that he's interested in, you can also see some videos. I'm not a huge confirmation expert, but I know a little bit about what I'm looking at, right? And so I like to look for ones that have at least have a sibling that's raced and won. Not necessarily, you don't have to all be champions, but you know, and in a lot of cases, look for value. Like they got huge value by getting in on tactical mounds early. I wish I got in on some of those, right? Or sorry, tactical landing offspring early. They have that tactical mounds. They made $250,000 last year, but now that's gone through the roof. So they kind of got to pivot because they're not. You know, they're not the biggest owners in the game, although they're much bigger than they used to be. So they got to pivot and go for, sometimes they'll go for first or second year stallions looking for value. So there's a lot that goes into it. But when I'm buying into one, I like to see at least one sibling that's raced and won. So I know there's a little bit of a history there of winning.
And you're the kind of guy that they're looking to get involved because, you know, you're a guy that's watching, you know, 100 races a week, and you know, you live it, you breathe it, you love horse racing. So it's a natural fit for somebody like you, somebody like me, that's, and you know, just, you know, we have regular day jobs. We have, you know, we're not any sort of, rich, you know, kind of clientele. We're the every guy that they're trying to get involved that loves racing, that loves being at the racetrack. And, so for guys like us, the stable.ca is a huge option because, you know, and I say it every week and people may get tired of it, but whether you own 1% or 100%, it's still that same feeling.
Absolutely. The thrill of winning is always, you know, the thrill of winning kind of speaks for itself, right? Whether you own 1 or 100 or 2 or 3%. And one of the things that I love about it is you can move shares just like the stock market, right? It's kind of set up that way. They got the board there. One cool feature they have now that I never noticed until recently was when you log into your account, there's a section that says sale offers from other owners. So people will put up a horse and a price saying, I want to buy this horse for this price. Well, there's a button there now where you can sort it down to only the horses that you own. So it's very, you get a very quick dashboard of, you know, hey, look, somebody offered me $1,000 for a share of Aunt Lily, for example, but, you know, and then you decide. Or you know, if you want to counter that, you could put up an offer yourself on a separate tab, offer to sell, right? So there's a little bit of haggling goes on and stuff, but I like that you can move your shares fairly quickly. You know, sometimes in this game, when things aren't going your way, you want to cut your losses, you can do that. Or, you know, you can sell high. So it really is kind of like, you know, the harness racing stock market.
Absolutely. And if you see something you like and you say, oh, you know, I just saw this horse race at Woodbine and maybe the horse had a bad trip. Maybe the horse, you know, had something that you noticed that could, you know, make it more valuable than it's maybe perceived. And there's that option also to get in on something that you think is on the come. I love all that. I mean, that's what could be better than that, especially when you're dealing with, you know, these micro shares of these horses. If you see one you want to get involved in, there's people out there that, you know, want to get in and out. You never know people's situations. And, you know, that's the beauty of it. So that's another great thing. And they don't really advertise that much. And for some of us to know that, I think is would just make it that much more attractive.
Absolutely. And like I said, and you're right, you don't know people's situations. Like I own, you know, I don't have any problem saying I own a total of 11 shares right now. I own 4% of Aunt Lily and What the Hill trotting filly named Leggy and 3% of Pelican Al. And, you know, that's kind of within my budget for the monthly bills, the way it's set up. But if something happened where I had less money coming in, I might want to get rid of them quick because, you know, maybe the bill is becoming a little bit onerous for me. I can do that, right? Or if these horses, by, you know, some miracle, make a pile of money this year, well, guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to be looking to buy another piece of another one at the sale. And I think a lot of people do that. You know, if they have, you know, you can end up with a surplus in your account by the time the first sale comes. If you got a horse that's winning some sire stakes or whatever, and the money's just sitting there, and, you know, you're going to get the itch to want to go buy a piece of a new one because they're all lottery tickets at that point, right? And people like to dream. So the whole thing's really set up really well, and it's very user-friendly. It's fairly simple to navigate through once you get in there and just play around with it.
And that's great. And I love to hear your perspective on it. They have some ownership webinars coming up. And what this is it's a 60-minute video call, and they explain everything. And I'm sure Anthony will be involved with both of these. And it's they have a couple set up here now, Saturday, March 30th, Monday, April 8th, and then a few more coming Saturday, April 27th, Monday, May the 6th. So that's right after the Derby there. So if you're interested in becoming a fractional owner, these video calls, I think, will come in very handy, especially if you're interested. And you've heard these past couple weeks. You heard from Anthony. You heard from Tim Tuato, one of the trainers. You heard from one of the owners that have been in there the past couple years. Now you're hearing from Garnett, who's a horse player that's showing that different side of it. So get involved in that stable.ca. Garnett, just give we're going to finish you up here. I know you got to go. That last little testimonial and, you know, get us out of here.
Yeah, listen, like we're, you know, everything that we've already said, it's a great opportunity for people to get in at the ground level. You know, even if you only get in and you buy 1% of a horse, the bill's really cheap and get a feel for it. And, you know, I think, if you hit the winner's circle once or twice, you're going to be looking to get more. So it's a great experience. And the other thing that we didn't mention was the videos. Every day, this guy, I don't know how Anthony does it, but every day he's putting us video updates about basically everything that goes on. So it's very unique. I don't know that anybody else does that. But, it keeps all the owners up to date on how their horses are racing, training, if there's any that are potentially maybe being sold, bought. It's all right there on their YouTube channel. If you subscribe to it, you get them in your YouTube feed when you log in, and it's all right there for you.
Absolutely. Very transparent, very great communication. They have the YouTube, they have emails, they have the website is very, you know, it gets updated very, very quickly. And like you said, you can navigate that pretty easily. So lots of positives. Garnett, thanks a lot for doing all you do and doing your handicapping, supporting the stable. And I'm sure we'll see you soon.
Anytime, Mike, always my pleasure. And you know where to find me anytime you need me.
And we'll be back after this with Ray, Ed, and me doing some Yonkers.
And next up here on the show, to round us out, we've got some Yonkers Raceway to discuss. It's going to be Monday, April 1st, 2024. And we've got the three divisions of the Borgata Pacing Series coming up. And we also, of course, have the Blue Chip Matchmaker going on currently at Yonkers. I've been on the mic announcing those on these Friday evenings. So several divisions of that coming up this Friday, March 29th. But the Borgata is going to be our main focus. And I'm going to bring in two guests this week to help us handicap these races. Once again, Ray Catolo is here. Ray, this is your third week in a row of the Borgata. It's like you're really a part of us at Yonkers.
Yeah, it's like I'm also a part of the show.
And Mike Probosi's here as well. Mike, you know, we appreciate Ray and his dedication to the show to come on semi-sick. But secretly, do you think there's a hope that Ray's a little bit more subdued when sick?
Well, that's a big hope. But he does sound terrible. And I hope I don't catch anything, even just being on this podcast.
That's true. Ray, don't transmit us anything through the phone. You know, people were concerned for a while about COVID being transmitted by, like, through the phone or whatever. Like you know, Ray, same thing here. Don't communicate anything to us. But hey, regarding the matchmaker, I guess I'll speak on behalf of it just because I'm the one that's been announcing in the last several weeks. There's three divisions this week, and there are two divisions in the late pick four, so we're going to have to wait a little bit to see some of these divisions on Friday night. But race number four includes Doug's Babe, who has been disappointing 2 weeks in a row as the favorite. But spoiler alert to my picks for Friday night, I'm going to go back to her one more time here to see if she can't get it done in that short field of five. And then races 10 and 11 are the other two divisions. Hey, race 10, we got to give some love to AVF Claire. That's Rod Allums Jr.'s horse, another friend of the show here. But, you know, this one, two back, I thought the trip was really rough for this one through the stretch. You watch the replay, seemed to have some pace to offer, just had nowhere to go, but not particularly as well last week. So we'll wish the best for him. But
Rod did say that she bled last week. Yeah. So that's just an update.
And a driver change this week.
So could be a reason to come back to her a little bit this week. But the one Tony's mom draws the rail there, you know, not sure if it was a horse that coming into the series I would have thought of as a big stakes type in the spot. But you know what? She's been very solid so far through the series. And with the rail draw against that group, I think another good chance there. And race 11, you know, Michaela's always just kind of been one of my favorite horses for some reason. Outside post, you know, two back. Obviously, things didn't work out for her from off the pace. Took care of business last week very well, expecting her to continue to roll here. But, you know, it's a good-looking series there. We got three good divisions Friday night. But our main attentions will go to Monday night's cards. We'll just jump right into that. Monday, we're looking at three divisions this week. We had four the last couple of weeks. And this week we're down to three divisions. And I think what do we have? We got a 7, and an 8. So that means we're down to 22 horses. I'm a math major. I can do math. So the 8 horse field kicks us off in race 5 there. It kicks off the 50-cent pick 5 as well on Monday night. And, of course, that pick 5 on Monday night includes the $10,000 guaranteed pool thanks to the SOA. So a great opportunity to jump into the sequence. And, in fact, all three Borgata legs are in that pick 5 sequence here this week. Race 5 kicks us off. Ray, I don't know, start us off. What are you going to give to us in this first race? A line drive Hanover is our morning line favorite at 5-2.
Well, and from that outside post, you have to imagine that Scotty's going to want to try and put him forward. He's been putting this horse forward, granted, from inside posts the last 2 weeks. Last out, though, made like that kind of corner move and then relinquished the lead to Desperate Man, who came rolling. And then what's funny is last week I was praising Scott for pulling pocket when he did in leg one to win, and then he got bottled in that exact same situation in leg two and had to settle for second. But it also didn't look like Desperate Man was really going to lose. So measured? Who knows? Though he's the best horse in this race. The post is just ultimately the question. I feel like it gives him an advantage to get into the spot he wants to go. From last week, though, there are a couple of horses really popped out. Coach's Corner popped out, even though he had cover in the second half of the mile, but the way that he was plugging along in the straightaway, even when he was kind of crooked coming towards the finish, either he was on a line or he was just trying to get steered inside of a tiring horse, and please let me know. He kept on rolling under the line, and all that's positive to kind of look for, and he gets a good draw this time out, but he comes from top connections and trainer Per Engblom and Jason Bartlett, so who really knows what kind of price you're going to get on that. I'd be curious what kind of price goes on Some Moment Somewhere this time around, because if you go back and watch that replay, Yannick wanted to launch him, but then had to take back because three other horses to his inside were leaving, and then the horse was kind of hard to handle in the second half of the race. Yannick tried to let him roll, really couldn't get going from where he was, and this is a horse who was second to Desperate Man in leg one and had been racing well at Northfield in the Meadows in their higher-end condition races. So to me, I have Some Moment Somewhere on my radar as a horse that could be a possible overlay. Beyond that, I wasn't really impressed with Magic Four's debut in the series, and he gets a bad post draw again. So I kind of want to – I'm curious what he'll do this time around, if he'll show any kinds of signs of life for these next two legs of the series. Strength from above, I think he might have more to offer. He came to a total stop when he got undercut up the backside, and I don't know if that maybe was the reason why then he decided to just stop moving forward, or if he was just kind of out of gas at that point. This first division has a lot of notes on horses and a lot of room for certain horses to improve, but a lot of it ultimately comes down to what kind of mile do they want to give Line Drive Hanover? Is he going to be a much the best muscle down the road, or are they going to Are they going to try and just put him forward? If he gets a trip, they'll give him the trip. It's always curious because, you know, Scott's an aggressive driver, but if he needs to be patient, he'll be patient, and that makes the read of the race a bit more difficult for me.
Mike, I feel like I've watched, you know, we've worked together enough times in the past. I know your handicapping styles. I think you're going to give us an 8-1 morning line choice on top. Am I correct?
You do know me. I was sitting here thinking Ray talked all this time. He didn't even mention the winner of the race. Like, I don't know what he's doing.
I don't know how you saw anything from Leonidas's last two races that make
him
live.
Well, that's not who I'm picking. So I don't. You know, it's good that you can read the program. That the four is in the race, though. Fun at the Beach, who I thought raced much better, loves this place, and this is almost an identical setup to last year with him. And you know, you're going to have the line drive Hanover Money that comes, and he's probably going to be 3-5. And you know, it's sort of like Tattoo Artist last year, who everyone thought would, you know, just be a monster in the series. And I think line drive Hanover is a little false as far as I'm concerned. And you know, he's good, and there are times that he looks like a world beater, and then other times he's flat. And if you look back in his lines, that's been his case basically his entire career. Now he gets an outside post. He doesn't have that inside benefit here, and he's not going to get a perfect trip like he has in the first two legs. He's going to have to work in this race. I love that Fun of the Beach was outside most of that race last time and just grinding. That's his kind of trip. He's always going to be a price. He loves this racetrack. I like how he's been sort of raced into the series here now. This race sets up absolutely perfect for him, and he can live on the outside and grind all these horses, especially if line drive Hanover doesn't show up. Who does he really have to worry about? Of all these other horses you mentioned here, I certainly think you know, you shouldn't be all that scared of. I do think Some Moment Somewhere has some potential to be value, but he's going to take money now. I mean, was sub 3-1 versus Desperate Man in leg one. So now moves back inside. Everyone's going to see what you saw. And I agree with you. I do think that he's probably the next most likely winner of the race, in my opinion. I like those two in this race. I think it's one of those two. Give me everything I can against line drive Hanover in here. Let me start that pick five with the 3 and the 4 and roll. And Coach's Corner, I do think that horse raced well last time. I do think he was moving forward late, and the inside post should help him. But he seems like a type two that, I don't know, does he get caught up with line drive Hanover early in this race? That's certainly a possibility here, and I think that could end up you know, affecting him late. So give me Fun at the Beach. Give me Some Moment Somewhere.
You know, my TV co-host has been on me the last couple of weeks, Peter Vanaglia, who obviously from the SOA listening into these shows that I'm not giving out picks on here. I'm saving them for Monday night. So you know what? Since I'm going to be off this Monday night, not there, I'll give some thoughts here. But you know what? Mike kind of took them. You know, with Line Drive Hanover, I still picked him to win the series at the start. And I still think I'm still going with that at the end. But he's got the win. Ray, are you just sick, or are you already bashing my thoughts here?
To take my noises as you will, I guess.
You know, I still think Line Drive, I told him at the end of the series, but you know, he's got a win, he's got a second, the outside post, you know, we haven't seen him do the best work from off of the pace really in the past, but outside post, got to figure maybe, you know, Scott, not sure how well he can get away from there, going to try some things, you know what I'm saying, they've got some points to play with here, they've got a good number of points rolling here, maybe they try it from off the pace, does work out for him, I don't know if he's quite going to be able to blast from there, so I'm with Mike. Some Moment Somewhere obviously took serious action in the Desperate Man last time out, or two back, last time, you know, the big number's kind of inflated because he comes out of that Desperate Man line drive Hanover cover bridge, you know, he comes out of that division with those three winners from the first leg. So I think that one's worth an include. But Fun at the Beach, right. I mean, how good has he been in the past here? I think we saw two back, you know, very conservative there from the outside post in leg one. A much more aggressive try last week while trying it there in the outer flow, finishing a strong second to what Stanley got in the end. And this week here, third week, this could be his opportunity. I don't know if we get the 8-1 morning line. That's the negative. But I'm with you, Mike. 3-4 would be the way that I would start that $10,000 guaranteed pick five on Monday night. And
my only qualm with Fun at the Beach, I want to point this out, is you look at how that race set up and also who was in that race altogether. This is the plan, dropped anchor. So that caused traffic behind them, for one, to give Fun at the Beach the jump. And then who was chasing behind him? Horses that don't gain anyway, minus what Stanley got, who got the trip and beat him. So
That's the one thing I don't like about him, is that he honestly got a pretty perfect trip, all things considered. He barreled into a battle-weary leader. He had no one else except one horse who could actually gain in the final quarter coming after him. And, you know, there are other coaches. Corner can gain. Some Moments Somewhere can gain. Line Drive Hanover can. I feel like this is a tougher proposition than the horses that he was facing in his most recent division. That's the only issue I raise.
I do think it hinges on whether Line Drive Hanover is good, or if, you know, but I'm playing for him not to be good. And if, you know, if you take him out of the race, Bonnet Beach looks a hell of a lot better.
Well, we'll flip the page here to race number 8 next. That's the second of 3 divisions. This one's a field of 7, and I did it my way, who has taken some serious action in the last 2 legs. Hasn't been able to get it done yet. Duncan, though, will be the morning line favorite after that win last time out, and draws the rail as well. Mike, what direction did you look here?
I don't see how Duncan loses this race if he does the same thing he did last week. Was able to control it. He's going to be able to control this race pretty easily. I don't really see anything in here to push him. I did it my way. Seems like a bigger track horse. He had every chance to get the front last time, and, you know, had to take back and ended up third early. He doesn't seem like that he's ever going to beat the one to the front in the race. I thought Backstreet Shadow raced pretty well there, but you know, he's drawn outside now. He's going to have to do his usual grind or try to set up a trip. And I just think Duncan controls it. I don't think anything can push him early. Hellabaloo's drawn in the parking lot, so usually when that happens, he takes back. He's looking for trips most races. Forever Boy, I thought, was better last time. Seemed to get around the track a little better, so he draws better now. He could be dangerous, but again, he's nothing that's going to push early. I think it's Duncan's race to lose. That was a very impressive race last time, I thought, and he's going to get a very similar trip.
So, Ray, assuming you're in the same camp that I am with Mike, that I think this surely is Duncan's race, let's ask you a different question, assuming that's your belief as well. With Duncan, you know, we see the form coming in from Northfield, moved to the Scott Domenico barn, 21 wins last year, you know, most North America, I think a lot of more some fair races. How do you see him fitting in the series long term, Ray? I mean, I just feel like, in my opinion, that, you know, he was a clear third at a big price behind Line Drive Hanover in the first leg. Last week, I'm not sure that was the strongest division he saw, and I'm not sure this one is either, really, this week. So, I mean, does he fit in with these horses long-term, the tops of the series?
The tough thing is that even horses that don't fit into, like, top classes and stakes classes and things like that, it doesn't necessarily dictate how they perform, because even like the cheapest horses in the toughest of races under the right circumstances can perform real well. You know, we've seen so many horses where maybe they're like 90-1 in a race and they put in some kind of eye-catching effort, and then that horse is like 6-1 and trying against tougher horses next time and they're kind of flat to the board. It's like it's such a horse to horse thing that it's tough to really provide, like, think of it in any kind of universal sense. Like, looking at a horse like Duncan, there's clearly ability on the small track, just given the, you know, miles at Northfield. On top of that, as a fair horse, you're going to be racing on half mile tracks and stuff like that. And if you even go and watch the replays, he is kind of a smaller horse, but I mean, otherwise, he's a 4-year-old, and so what you're looking at with a horse like him then is that there's still an upward trajectory for him, versus you look at a horse like Torrid Saint, who is next door. He's a 9-year-old. Not many horses at age 9 do better than they would have at age 4. There might be like a handful on this planet, and one of them was foiled again. But Duncan just looks like he's probably developing. He's turning into an aged horse. And ultimately, the thing is that as a 4-year-old, you know, you're a fresh 3-year-old going in against more legacy horses who have established themselves and are built and things like that. And that's what the difficulty is. And I mean, right now he's doing okay. He has an inside draw again. my thing is that does he get the lead from, because remember, it's a slanted gate. So does anyone to his outside try and outgun him to the punch? Maybe I did it my way. I saw the same thing Mike did. I was surprised that he couldn't really get by. This is the plan going into the first turn and took back. I Backstreet Shadow from that outside post making his second start. He's probably going to want to try an off the pace effort once more because he's always much better off a helmet. And I get frustrated when I see horses like Hellabaloo in this situation because for the most part, he goes. Like, no matter the situation, even in situations where you think there's no reason for him to go, he just goes because it's what Yannick does. And so it's, at this point, a coin flip to me about what he does. Because if Yannick, from that outside post where he can build his momentum, decides he wants to launch to the top and take the lead from Duncan, this is a different race. Like, Duncan won last week because he got totally left alone, in my eyes. And then Hemsworth came to his outside, but Hemsworth went a real long journey and tired into the stretch. So I think that helped Duncan in a sense. And then Backstreet Shadow, he wasn't fully extended. And why should he be? That was his first start since November. So I'm not totally sold on the Duncan's impenetrable camp. A lot does lean in his favor. I am curious, though, what Naturally Gifted does this time around. This is another horse that you go and watch the replay. It looked like took back, like could leave, but decided to, you know, because of post and stuff like that, to sit back. And then Todd's fighting this horse for a while. If you're watching towards the back, just waiting for something to go, something the horse just wanted to roll and never really got a chance to. So now it gets post five. It's going to be 12-1 in the morning line, probably way higher than that on the board. I feel like this horse could hit the board in some capacity just from this spot. And, you know, they'll have to try and put him into the race in some way. He was third to Covered Bridge two starts ago. So I feel like you're getting like 30-40-1. He's an absolute must use underneath. But as for on top, like, I don't want to say Duncan because it's Duncan's just too obvious, and if he wins, it's like whatever. But I'm not totally sold that this is his, like, solely his race.
Well, I will say, Ray, in your favor is the good angle of, for Magic Four, who you seem to like at a huge number, and potentially Naturally Gifted at a huge number. I liked both underneath in last week's legs. This week, I'm going to go against, but it means for sure they're probably going to take steps forward. So that's probably a positive sign for you. But Mike, let's talk about the ninth race, the final division of the Borgata Pacing Series on Monday night, the third leg. Rock and Roll Runa is kind of the surprise of the series so far for me. 2-2. Obviously, he's going to face a much tougher task, not only post seven, but also taking on Desperate Man here. Desperate Man, obviously, is a 2-2, and so far is the only one undefeated in the series. What Stanley got, a nice win last week after a strong second, two back. Covered Bridge, we know how good he can be in the past. Same thing for Semi Tough, who obviously was disappointing last week while taking all the money. But this is a tricky division, I think, Mike.
It is, and Rock and Roll Runa is actually undefeated in the series also with two perfect drives. Difficult ask, I think, and from this post and to face these level of horses now. And you're going to get the Covered Bridge. You're going to get Desperate Man. Even What Stanley Got, I mean, that's another one that's raced really well in the series. He did beat that one. I don't know what kind of trip we're going to get here, though. Did they take back? I mean, obviously, Desperate Man has been controlling races. He's looked phenomenal. It's really tough to go against him right now. Those two races were easy wins against really nice horses, especially last week. That was the toughest division I've seen in quite a while in a Borgata, and I thought he won pretty easy, and he wasn't even the favorite in the race. I mean, they could win this week and sit out a week and then, you know, get ready for the finals. He's a different horse right now at six. I think that he's a boss of this division as far as those first two races look. Now, things could change very quickly, but, you know, and I'm not really one to pick chalk. I mean, you know that, but if you're watching these races,
he looks better than them right now. Now that might change in a month, but he is the one for me. And no matter who he faces, I think he's going to be difficult. I think Covered Bridge can bounce back. He's got a lot of class to him. 18 wins last year, almost 500,000. So last time he was just okay, but he was up against Desperate Man there. And, you know, he did try him. He just wasn't quite good enough. He's outside here. I think Rock and Roll Runa will take some money out of that exacta. A lot of people will see those ones and be interested. So I do think the Desperate Man Covered Bridge exacta is very likely. Semi-Tough, really, I mean, I don't know where the money came for him last time, and I guess they must have thought he was going to get the front. He was just no good, and he hasn't been good so far in this series. His typical trips are when he can get up close and win that way, and I don't see how he gets that in this race. He's probably going to try to find the pocket, but that's going to be very prime real estate, and could set it up for somebody from the back. You know, what Stanley got has gotten two perfect trips, so not crazy about him. I think it's Desperate Man and Covered Bridge, and the rest of them are going to need scraps.
Yeah, you know, Ray, it's funny. When I picked What Stanley Got on top last week, I kind of acknowledged the perfect trip that he got two back, but alternatively, I thought he could have gotten that perfect trip again last week, which clearly he did. So still not sure, again, where he might fit in the series long term, but I guess I should tee it up to you more correctly, Ray. I realize myself, and I'm sure a lot of other people, were clearly a little bit more higher on Desperate Man currently than Rock Roll Runa, but more correctly, this is a matchup of the two horses that are undefeated in the series, and you know what, Rock Roll Runa surprised me so far massively, so he would surely be doing it again if he could win from post seven against Desperate Man.
Yeah, I mean, if we need to, like, craft narratives to make it exciting, I guess it's a matchup. It's not... Not it doesn't really feel like one in my eyes, because I've watched watching every prelim from last week and, you know, of the series so far. Granted, it's not a lot. This isn't hours of research, but Desperate Man has such an effortless motion to how he races at the moment, and Kekalee exudes such a confidence when driving. Even last week when Line Drive was really blitzing him late, once shaking loose, Matt never raised the stick at Desperate Man. It looked like he was actually kind of pulling him up before the finish. That was a measured victory in 51 versus Rock and Roll Runa, who in 52 against much weaker stock was fairly extended while Mark was trying to, you know, keep him on the bit, keep him focused. And granted, like, yeah, he has been a surprise. You don't see many horses come from the opens in Batavia and Saratoga and then, you know, make that foray into Grand Circuit free-for-all company. But from that outside post this week, you're probably going to see that patented Mark Mack blast. But I don't know. I don't think that horse has any measure against Desperate Man. Just, you know, Desperate Man's a much girthier, more muscly horse than Rock and Roll Runa, can carry his speed for much longer. It seems like even if, you know, it's contentious in that first quarter for the lead and Rock and Roll Runa gets into the pocket, I don't see how he has any hope against Desperate Man the way that he's been racing. Like, because we haven't even seen him be asked yet through both of his wins. So there's clearly a deeper well, and this field is not really of the caliber that is probably going to really, you know, drain much of it. I was disappointed, though, with how Covered Bridge raced last out, because he went for the lead, then sat, and then was just totally empty going first over into the final turn. And I kind of mentioned when he won in week one that he didn't have the same, like, turn of foot that, you know, made him so electric. And so I saw that again. Makes me wonder if he's starting to kind of regress, or if it just is going to take him a while to get back into that form that made him such a reckoning force in the series last year. But I'm in agreement with Mike that, like, class-wise, he's probably, like, the most logical
next horse. Most of these Thunder Hunter Joe was struggling to keep up most of the mile last out. Cranbourne couldn't even make the gate. What Stanley got, I feel like, is at a disadvantage being sandwiched between two speeds. Semi Tough's going to try an off the pace route, and that didn't work for him last out. And then I think Rock and Roll Runa loses. So it's one of those situations where if I'm making my fair odds line, I have Desperate Man probably at like 1-9.
Ooh, that's a strong endorsement from Ray Cotolo for Desperate Man here. But Mike, as we wrap up here, it's great, I think, that we discussed so much about minimum wagers. You know, we obviously with the Frazier segment in the beginning, we talked about that $2 double and the $1 pick five and the pick four. What's so nice, we have the same thing here with Yonkers, right? 50 cents in the pick five, which is okay because we get that $10,000 guarantee pool, which is always spectacular, and we can create good carryovers. Obviously, we had the carryover to create a $20,000 guarantee pool in the first leg of the series. But then the early and the late pick four, that dollar minimum, Mike, you really do see in those payouts how much that dollar minimum matters.
Big difference, I say this a lot, but it makes you narrow down your choices. It makes you dial in your handicapping and take stands. It's hard to play. You start spreading out, three by three by three and pick fours with a dollar minimum. That's a difficult thing. I mean, then you're looking at, $27 a horse for every horse in that fourth leg. The budgets can go up very quickly. So, but if you're able to narrow down selections, maybe get a race where you can single or go too deep and get prices, then the payouts go up exponentially. So get in on these pools, that get in on the seeded pools, the 10,000 guarantee. That's huge for the pick five. Play these pick fours. And, I know some of these races look a little obvious this week, but so lean on those legs and try to spread out in other legs and see what you can get. The handle has been decent on these Borgata races. So, jump in. I do think it's a good wagering opportunity.
We were talking about it last week, Peter and I, with the pick five. We were both, let me make sure I remember this correctly, we were both alive to a $60 potential payout on the 50-cent ticket, which is obviously not spectacular, but it was a very formful sequence to that point. Venturesome Arden from the outside post in that field of seven was only, quote-unquote, 30-1. The payout was nearly $6,000 of that horse won. So you really do, Mike, as we learn in these sequences, just need one big price to just create a massive windfall at the end of it.
Absolutely, and there's scores to be had, and you don't need to get every race to be a 10-1 shot to make a score. You just need one decent price in a sequence, especially with the dollar minimum to eliminate a huge amount of tickets and more money for you if you can get it right.
Well, Ray Cotolo, it's funny. One of my work meetings, we have this gentleman named Lane on there, and we always start the meeting with Lane's Corner, and he just kind of gives us, like, to be fair, his updates from the week and, important business-related stuff. I think we need to have Ray's Corner. So we're finishing these last 30 seconds with Ray's Corner. Ray, you can give us whatever you want.
Okay. I got blood drawn the other day, and that was a interesting experience, especially when you get your cold sweats I got the flu. It might be the flu. That's what I was just figuring out, because it was mystery illness coming back, and then everyone else got sick around me, and that kind of told me something. So I think if I've learned anything this week, it's to not be around anybody, because then no one else gets sick, and if you're sick but no one else knows, then you're actually fine.
And that's is this week's episode of Ray's Corner. You can come back next week. There might be more. There might not be. I don't know. But we thank you for tuning into this week's episode of the Harness Players Podcast. Thankful to all of our guests as always this week. Hopefully you have the best luck in your wagering endeavors this weekend and next week. So I'm out of town. So I think, we might see some Kevin Plouch on the show. Mike Rabosi is just a good little workhorse. I'm sure he's here, unless Ray got him sick. So if Mike's not here next week, Ray got us all sick through this broadcast. But hopefully Mike will be here. Maybe Ray will be back. I think Kevin Plouch is filling in some. So we'll talk to you next week on the Harness Players Podcast.